Хөрхөн охид trap songs trap songs trap songs trap songs trap don't song trap Түүний сонсдог хөгжим дур булаа Дагаж дуудан дур булаа мууруулаа
Hey everybody, welcome to a brand new MMA Roasted podcast. I want to thank our sponsor, Speedweed. Listen, people, marijuana is legal in California. Get it delivered. Do not leave your house during this pandemic for marijuana and go to dispensaries and who knows where those people have been. Okay, instead, get it delivered right to you. We got a special show. We have a UFC Hall of Famer in the house. One of the best coaches ever. My favorite commentator. I got to say, out of even including Rogan, out of all the commentators that I watch, I pretty much watch LFA because you're the commentator. I mean, I watch the fights, but you definitely have no bias. And whenever you say who wins, that's who I think wins. I don't even go by the judging. I go by Pat Miletich's scorecard. So very underrated. Very underrated.
I want you to argue with me once in a while, though.
It's hard. I mean, you really call it like it is. And the thing about LFA that I like about it is they put up a guy that's like 8-0 versus a guy who's 8-0. I mean, they put up a guy who's 2-0 versus a 2-0. It's not like you're going to see a bunch of washouts. Once in a while you will, but they're pretty much even fights, especially for that level of promotion.
I don't know why you froze.
Can you see me now?
Yeah, it was shitty internet problem.
But me and you, Tyler, you're here, right?
I'm here. Pat? No, Pat's frozen.
Pat's frozen.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, I was saying, I honestly think LFA is a very underappreciated it's on Fight Pass now, fight promotion, because they have really good matchups. And they're, like, fun to watch, too.
They do. Well, they have great fight. Like, all the local guys that I know that are – they're, like, one, maybe two steps away from UFC. If you're at the top of the LFA, that means UFC's looking at you, right? So if you go to an LFA show, you're getting good fights.
Yeah.
You're getting really good fights. Like, I can't convince my UFC fanboy friends that LFA is just as good. But, you know, the real people know.
Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, good. So my internet connection, for some reason, a little messed up. We've had some storms today, but I can hear you, so that's good. The LFA has very exciting fights. And I think, you know, one, yes, there are a lot of very talented young fighters that are coming up through that. They know it's the conveyor belt into the UFC, or one of the few, certainly. And also, they're going to pull out all the stops because they're very hungry and they want to get to the UFC. Once people get to the UFC many times, not always, of course, but many times, if you make mistakes at that level, you get sent back down and people don't want to do that. So, you know, that's I think, the three reasons why the fights are very, very good. I mean, Mark Vieri does an incredible job of matchmaking.
Yeah, I think a lot of guys in the UFC, they're scared. They're fighting not to lose versus fighting to win. Where in the LFA, they're fighting to win because they want to get to the UFC. So,
well, that's the thing. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. When I made it to the UFC, the first thing they said was basically, look, if you lose, we can get rid of you. I went, well, I'm just going to fight safe and pay my bills. You know, and I most of the time I did. I mean, I finished some people, but I just made sure I was ahead on the scorecards, not get crazy. I honestly, guys, I wasn't there to be a fan favorite to pay my
You weren't there to be a fan favorite. You were there to get paid. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. Well, I mean, look.
I agree with that.
I went back and watched a lot of your fights, Pat, and I don't know if the guys were just tougher then or crazier then, but like you fought Dan Severn and gave up 85 pounds. Like that would never 85 pounds.
85 pounds. That's a person.
That was the I can tell you that was the most miserable evening of my life. It was nighttime out. It was an outdoor fight. It was like 87 degrees and humid as hell. And having that monster lay on top of me and crush me against the cage for a good amount of that fight was not fun. I also had a family friend. He played football for my dad in college. My dad was a college football coach at one time also. And so we were real close families, and they owned the local grocery store and all that. And his name was Eddie Langford, and he was drunk, and my head was crushed up against the chain link, and Eddie was literally ringside, and so he could just lean up to where his ear was inches from, or his mouth was inches from my ear, and he'd go, "Do it for your dad, Miletich, do it for your dad."
Oh, my God.
And I could smell the beer on his breath while I'm getting my ass kicked by Dan Severn, and I finally looked at him and I go, "Eddie, go sit the fuck down."
Well, that fight was a 20-minute fight. It was a draw. But he laid on you for 20 minutes. I mean, that was – I don't even know if he even tried to stop you. He just basically sat on you, and there was nothing you can do.
Well, and it was so slippery out on the canvas. It wasn't canvas. It was vinyl. And that was probably one of the saving graces for me, because I could slip and slide the heel and kind of deal with his knees on the ground to the head and things like that. So I didn't really get blasted with any of those. But it was – he was so ungodly strong that it was – I mean, I was – totally zapped after that fight. But I did land a huge right hand to his body once. I swear to God, I touched his spine. and every ounce of air left him. But then he started mauling me again.
Well, it was basically like one of those movie fights where at the end the guy comes through, except he didn't come through. He just sat on you. It was one of those things where like you're waiting for like that last minute for like, oh my God, but it never happened. It was just,
That was a tough one. That was a tough one. But it was, I've got a lot of respect for Dan, man. He did a lot for the sport.
No, totally.
You've done a lot for the sport.
Yeah. And then you fought Townsend Saunders, who I remember as a wrestler, you know, Townsend Saunders was a gold medalist. He was like the, you know, I think I had his like wrestling shoes at one point. And you fought him and you won. It was a close fight. I watched it again. It was, did you think you won that fight, or did you think it was close? Do you think it was draw? What did you think?
I knew it was close, but I felt I was up on the cards. But more than anything else, just because anytime he got takedowns, he never hit me. He couldn't hit me. Right. You know, that's one thing that we really worked on a lot back then was defensive skills, because I talked to a lot of the old kickboxers and old boxers that I trained with, and many of them actually had a real tough time staying on, you know, what we were talking about. And I recognized that pretty quick and talked like their tongue was too big mouth. And I said, man, I don't want to be punchy like that. So I really focused and I watched fighters who were really good defensively as far as strikers. I mean, the old Willie Peps and, you know, the old time boxers. You know, Willie Pep was a boxer who, not to take you off on a tangent, but you know, for anybody that doesn't know who Willie Pep is, you can go back and actually watch the round on YouTube where he was in his corner and he said to his cornerman, he goes, "I'm not going to throw a single punch the entire round, and all the judges are going to give me the round because of my defensive skills." And his cornerman went, "Willie, don't stop screwing around and just go out and put this guy away." And he goes, "No, I'm not going to throw one punch this whole round." He didn't throw one punch, and he made the guy look so stupid that he actually won the round on all three judges' scorecards. So that's what I started to absorb, paying attention to footwork and defensive skills standing and on the ground. And, you know, that's the stuff I think that saved me from ending up punch drunk.
How good do you think Townsend Saunders could have been? Because he only had two fights. He had two losses, but they were both good fights against beasts. You think he could have been amazing?
He was an incredible athlete. He was so explosive, very, very powerful. But I think he was too nice of a guy. I don't think he could think in the way you have to put turn a switch on as a fighter to go from being a nice person to be almost a criminal is what you're doing, because you're setting traps to hurt people. You know, things like that in fighting. And there's just people out there that just aren't capable of doing that, which is the vast majority of humans on the planet, honestly.
Well, I think everybody is capable of doing it, but most people don't know how to access it. Like, every human being is capable of all – we're all capable of all the same things, save some genetic freaks, right? But
yeah, yeah.
You've never been taught how to go there, or you're scared to go to that place, or you think you might never come back.
By the way, Pat Tyler, by the way, is my co-host, also a Marine. We coach wrestling together. He's a brown belt. He's an amateur fighter.
That's awesome. Pleasure.
Thank you.
I know who he is. Nice to meet you. But people can access it a lot easier when the refrigerator's empty. Trust me.
Right. Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's what Sinbad said. He's like, comedians are funny when they're riding the bus.
It's true.
Yeah. Are you living in a palace, Adam?
No, I'm not living in a palace. Journeyman comedian / middle school wrestling coach. While it should make a lot of money, it's actually.
Right. Well, I was just, the only reason I was asking if you were really wealthy based on what Sinbad's quote was, I would assume then that somebody else is writing your material.
Oh, that's very nice of you, man. No, it's just, I mean, I'm still hungry. The thing about comedy is it's kind of like fighting, where you get humbled every day. I mean, just when you think you got it figured out is when that crowd just hates you. So
it's gotta be, I've done a lot of public speaking, motivational speaking, things like that. And, the stand-up comic question is about the most terrible thing that I would ever even envision attempting, to be honest with you. And it's easy to be an ad lib in a conversation like this, but to have the timing and the memory skills to be able to go through an entire set and make people laugh and remember you, it's nearly impossible.
It's also the biggest high, though. It's the biggest high. When you see people, when you're on stage and you're looking people cry laughing, I mean, cry. And you're just like, you're giving them the power and the joy, and their stomach hurts and their face, they're like, oh, my, I couldn't keep it. My face hurts from frowning so much. From laughing so much. That's when you're like, man, I'm doing something right with my life. That's why right now this pandemic is just like, it's like taking away my superpowers, you know, of making people laugh.
I don't know how to put this, because there are a lot of jokes to be made here, but just now's not the time, right? Now's not the time. People are actually losing their lives, which is very tragic. But for the people that did research and paid attention, and, you know, I've been hosting a show for 5 years now where we've been monitoring the systems and you know, the derivatives market and all this type of stuff and the bioweapons labs and everything else that's on. I've been paying attention to this stuff for the past 5 years. While most people are just going about their lives, going to work, doing their thing. And, you know, it was over a year ago, I was screaming from the rooftops going, this is all going to come apart, like in the spring of 2020. I was saying it. And people can go back and listen to my show. And then did I foresee or anyone foresee that they were going to use a pandemic to as camouflage for it, for the biggest smash and grab in world history? Didn't foresee that.
So I want to talk to you about that. You obviously think this is a real thing. People are dying, and it's people should be, but you don't think anything should be closed down.
No, 100% not. 100% not. You know, they even Fauci and others even said before this even that locking people in their houses actually causes a warp it. Because look, we're still going to the grocery store. We're still going to the gas station. We're still going to different places. We're still interacting. We're still touching stuff that other people are touching all over the damn place. Mm-hmm. And to think that it's not spreading and then locking us in our houses with our families, but here's the thing. We have, and other developed nations, of course, have 25 bioweapons labs alone that in Eurasia, with the ability to create that attack specific DNA. Those were basically engineered by our scientists, and those scientists have diplomatic immunity, which means they can carry anything they want and you can't search it. So this was established well over a year ago on our show with documentation from the Department of Defense and the Pentagon. We feel that those documents were released to scare the shit out of the Japanese or the Chinese and the Russians. When all of a sudden the head of the Harvard laboratory gets arrested, Lieberman gets arrested, being paid, I mean, $50,000 to university, and then two scientists from China from that university get arrested also for espionage. You know, you got to say to yourself that this doesn't.
Missed the very, very end of it.
Okay, so Pat.
Yes.
Okay, so Pat, walk me through this a little bit, because I'm not as informed or as smart as you are. Okay, so You think that the U.S. came up with it?
You're actually much smart. You're actually much smarter than I am. You just haven't time, you know, digging like I. That's my show.
All right, all right. So walk me through it. Okay, so the U.S. came up with this disease, sent it to China, or China stole it from us. Then they started experimenting on bats. Then they released it on purpose.
Well, we can't look. It ultimately, what I'm saying is, do we have laboratories that are capable of this? 100%. They were experimenting on COVID-19 in Chapel Hill at the University of North Carolina laboratories also. Lab created. But what I'm saying is you don't write an 800-page piece of legislation, 800 pages in 2 weeks' time, and then pass it for a massive out for all the global banks all of a sudden, and we get meanwhile, now the banks are buying up so many assets, billions of dollars a day in assets, small corporations, family farms, land, you know, all kinds of property. The global banks are scooping this stuff up after they get the stimulus money, you know, and if you paid attention to the global banks, again, stock prices, Deutsche Bank, I just posted it on Twitter today and Facebook. At one time it was $77, went down just before the 2008 housing collapse, it was $24. And before this collapse, it was $6.50. The writing was on the wall. It's just too obvious.
So do you think the government used this pandemic as an excuse to, or the world banks to tank that? Why would they want to tank the market?
Because they can buy everything for pennies on the dollar, bro, which they're doing. We are witnessing full socialism at night by thievery, bro. We are witnessing full-blown government takeover of all private, almost all private business. I mean, if you look at the airlines, Delta Airlines CEO today, he's just now a puppet for the government because they took the stimulus money, saying that you're going to have immunization papers to be able to get on their airplanes. Dude, do you realize what that does? If you're willing to allow medical experiments to be conducted on yourself and your children just for the right to get on an airplane, you got problems. You got big problems. And unfortunately, there's going to be millions of who are ignorant to what's really going on who are going to get in line to get that vaccine.
Oh, I'd say 95% of the world.
So do you think the U.S. was in on the experimentation in China to develop this COVID-19?
Well, look, there are certain sectors of, you know, our society who are globalists, obviously. They want to enrich themselves. Certainly others who are not Americans, you know, including the people that ran the Federal Reserve. Most of them are not American families. Listen, man, the only way I can explain it is when you look at the history of eugenics from the Gates family and many of these other people, and if you look at the root of eugenicist, these people believe in that they are of a higher DNA than the rest of the world. And they don't feel that we almost deserve to live. And Gates has absolutely said he's a eugenicist. He wants population control. He experimented on Africans, which is documented, you know, giving them so-called vaccines and then making them sterile. They're sterilizing the continent, basically, is what they were in the process of doing. And those doing it. So, you know, that's the thing. You know, people want a historical, you know, the Tuskegee met on black males in this country from 32 to 1972. They wanted to see what happened when syphilis went untreated in American men, black men, and it was it got exposed finally. That's a historical perspective on what these people do.
Right, and that's the problem. There's so much that has there's so much that's thrown at you every day in terms of media and content to be able to sift through what's true and what's not, even knowing the things that happened in the past, you know, even like CIA's involvement in JFK, Martin Luther King, all these kind of things. Like, we know these things happened. They've admitted it, but still you know, the safer person inside of you wants to go, no. It's what they're saying it is. I don't want it. Like, you it's, almost don't want thing. It because you know you're going to find answers. So you just, it's like a cognitive dissonance almost, you know?
It is cognitive dissonance. You know, the vast majority of people talking about maybe professional fighting is what unlocked in my brain the ability to think like they do and figure out their next steps. Because all, my gut feeling has always been correct on a lot of, on almost everything that we've been proven correct over and over and over, as time goes by. You know, it's as I said, I had it in January. My wife and kids had it in January. Almost my whole production crew got it in January when we did a show down in New Mexico at the Route 66 casino. We flew in on Thursday, did the show Friday, flew out Saturday, and by Sunday afternoon, all the guys from all around the country getting sick.
Yeah.
I brought it home to my wife and kids. And now when I was saying that on my show or saying it on Twitter or saying it anywhere else, everybody called me a tinfoil hat wearer. And now even CNN just today, as research comes out that this was happening long before they told us that it was COVID-19. I went, no shit.
Yeah.
But Pat, is there any part of you that thinks maybe 'cause I'm open to hearing this and I'm learning a lot right now, but is there any chance that maybe they're telling the truth and this is just.
not a cell in my body.
I mean, there's no chance of thinking maybe this is just a disease that no one expected and it really did happen because of a bat left the lab and now.
Well, here it is. Look at this. Let me show you. Let me see. And I'll find.
Well, the truth part is that this is legitimately a bad disease. Yeah,
this is just some of my notes. Like, I research this consistently, but if you go through the history of pandemics, this thing is a midget compared to the rest of the pandemics that are bang. This thing has killed, 150,000 globally so far in 8-9 months? That's because that's how long it's been out. 150,000, a small one by standards, kills a million.
Well, right, and again, I think they're less concerned about people actually dying as they are about infrastructure failing, like hospital infrastructure failing. Because if that many people are getting sick,
but the hospitals, bro, everything, videos from all over the.
In a lot of areas, they are. This is true.
I've got nurses and doctors messaging me constantly because Joe, who listened to my show from all over the country. And they're going, dude, they're taking nurses off left and right. Nobody in hospitals. Because none of us are out getting hurt, getting in car wrecks, getting hurt doing yard work, falling off of swings that kids do when they're playing outside, shit like that. So my thing is, you know, Asian flu in 1 year from 56 to 7, whatever, killed 2 million people. The Hong Kong flu killed a million in 1968. You know, the AIDS pandemic, 36 million in a couple of years, you know, so I can go on and on, but this coronavirus is a midget comparatively. So that's just one more, if I was an attorney in a court of law, I would go, this is just one more piece of evidence to show you that this is not about a pandemic. It is about a financial collapse and literally scooping up all assets to own everything.
So,
Pat, though, when you say like the government was going to collapse, right? Wasn't the U.S. economy doing better than it's ever been? Like, why would
not if you paid not if you paid attention to the behind the scenes the derivatives mark the derivatives bubble was 4 times the size of the entire global economy. As I said, the bank stocks, global bank stocks, were absolutely headed off a cliff. You know, what's on the surface, that's the problem. Everybody looks at what's on the surface, not what's underneath. You know, people are to Peter Schiff, who was the economist that called the 2008 collapse when every economist was laughing at him. We've had him on my show several times. And he described it perfectly. He said, everybody's paying attention because the media is doing such a masterful job of you know, confusing people that the COVID-19 is the needle, and they're focused on the needle. They're not focused on the global banks and the derivatives bubble and everything else. This is the bubble. They're all focused on the needle, not the real problem. And the real problem is coming. The real problem is coming very, very soon. Because you can't inject, you know, they're not telling you the amounts exactly. Peter Schiff says $12 trillion into the economy. You can't do that without completely devaluing the American dollar. I mean, chicken and eggs and things like that have already doubled in price that I've noticed because sometimes I do the shopping. So when you have hyperinflation, you know, you end up with a situation like Zimbabwe where you needed a wheelbarrow full of cash to buy a loaf of bread.
Now, do you think, because some people, I'm watching a lot of these videos and these conspiracy videos that they think that eventually this is their way of getting one world economy of like $1 system or one. Do you think that's going to happen?
Well, here's the thing. You know, they attempted in the original stimulus package to put in there that the Federal Reserve was going to create a digital currency. You don't want digital currency. You don't want that kind of control. So they pulled that out. That got pushed back out. I think it got a lot of pushback from a few politicians, or they did it to test it and then saw the citizens freak out and then pulled it back out. Now in this second round, where they're doing a half trillion, like another half trillion, whatever, they're trying to put it back in. And if that passes, then the Federal Reserve can create a digital currency. Then you go to eventually, if it's Federal Reserve and the European central banks and all of that sort of stuff, then you essentially have, besides the BRIC nations, which is Brazil and a few others, it's always been this battle between the central bankers and the BRIC nations. Once China 7 or 8 years ago, whatever it was, started using the yuan to buy oil and other goods instead of the American dollar, that's when you knew the American dollar was doomed. And that's really, you know, kind of explains from a historical perspective about it.
Now, you have a wife and three daughters. Are they still talking to you right now? Or do they think that you lost your mind?
Actually, you know what? My wife gets it. My wife gets it. She's, you know, a doctor of chiropractic. She's a very, very smart woman. She doesn't, you know, she doesn't want, just like anybody who has a good heart, she doesn't want to believe that this stuff is true. She prays that it's not true, but unfortunately, you know, she knows it is. My two high school daughters, you know, they've paid attention. They've paid attention. And, I mean, these two kids, have made their teachers cry in high school during debates because they're so educated on so much of the subject matter, and put their high school teachers to shame. In one case, a Spanish teacher actually cried and left the room.
Wow. Did she get deported? No.
Yep. You still got it. You still got it.
Now, as far as now, how do you think Trump's doing with this whole thing?
Who, you know, is Trump who he said he was? If he kills the Federal Reserve and creates a gold-backed Treasury note, then he is who he says. If he does,
can we create a gold-backed Treasury note at this point, or a something
sure.
something back?
Sure. Well,
is there enough? Is there enough gold? Nope.
Yeah. The people that are saying we don't have any gold is shit.
Man, we've
got a lot of gold. Is China backed the yuan with gold a couple of years back? Once they made the move, I went, oh shit, it's on, right? So if Trump does that, and he took all the free or into the Treasury, and the head of, you know, the head of the Federal Reserve also. So Mnuchin still technically is the boss of things, but he has to handle Trump. So Trump is now in control of that. So if he does the Federal Reserve, absolutely, Treasury note, then, I mean, in their language, we are up without a paddle.
Now, are you worried for your own safety that someone's going to knock on your door and take you out or something? Or...
or possibly lose jobs because sometimes like LFA doesn't want, or not LFA, but other people might be like, well, we don't want a guy that's sort of, you know, and, you know, sometimes I know in Hollywood, people are afraid to have your opinion.
Look, man, here's the thing. You know, who believe what I'm saying to you, they're afraid to say it themselves, but they know it's true. And I think that I've got a lot of good friendships with people, and this is not a political stance. That's the thing. This is not a left or right leaning stance. This is an American for the country keeping any semblance of sovereignty at all, from control of the globalist, you know, for don't understand it. That's fine. If you don't want to try and absorb what I'm saying, hey, no problem. This isn't me hating on Republicans, because right now, the guys on both sides are absolutely compromised and bought and paid for. They owe the banks. They owe the banks a lot, and they are lockstep with one, at least the politicians is what I'm saying. So give you an idea, we had a guest who worked for Bear Stearns. We had a couple days ago, while he was sitting in his office, he was working with the son of, gosh, D'Amato from New York.
Yeah.
And then Patrick Moynihan, the other looking one, was a Democrat.
Right.
And he was at Bear Stearns working with the son. D'Amato comes walking in, gives his own son a hug and a kiss, and then goes in to talk to the boss at Bear Stearns. Then the next, like, he goes literally 5 minutes later, Moynihan had been slandered in the media. The criminal was that. Boy, just Moynihan walks in, five, gives the son a hug, kiss on, and does the same to Alphonse Otto. And so our guest told us, he goes, D'Amato's son, what was that? What the hell is going on here? And he goes, and D'Amato's son goes, that's stupid. These guys are best friends, man. They golf or they drink.
You could see, that's the thing I think right now is that people think if you're a Trump supporter, and look, I'm not a Trump supporter. I wasn't a Bernie supporter. And I'm not a Biden supporter. I just sort of like try to figure out who the best person is for my life, you know, and then vote on that. I'm sort of an independent. But it seems like the conversation, if you even say I support Donald Trump, people hate you. They don't ask you why or what is it about Donald Trump or what is it. They just, and on the other side too, if you say, oh, I'm going to vote for Biden, oh, blah, blah. So it's like you can't even have a conversation anymore without getting attacked on both sides, which is such bullshit.
Yeah. No, it is. It's very sad. And the American people are on all of this stuff, unfortunately. So, I think that here's what we've talked about too on the show is, you know, we were talking about that a long time ago, long before he got arrested, all the stuff and the shit he was doing. And then he gets arrested and he's a walking dead, gonna be dead, and he ends up dead, and they call it a suicide. And many conspiratorial thinkers are saying no way, murder. Well, those that a little deeper will realize that this was everything he was doing was a Mossad operation to compromise and blackmail the hell out of powerful people and people within influence. And I honestly don't even believe he's dead, frankly. He could be. But
I think he's fighting Bellator next year.
I don't believe he's dead.
No, I honestly think he's fighting for Bellator against Tank Abbott in 3 weeks.
But the thing is, here's the thing. Millions of Americans got red-pilled with that happening, right? Now, with this going on, it's a little too late, unfortunately, I think, in many ways. But millions more are getting red-pilled hard, force-fed the red pill right now.
So anyway, speaking of red pill, we got Matt Schnell here, who an awesome fighter. He's 5-1 in his last 6 fights. You're here with the legend Pat Miletich. You were LFA champion, right? Or LFC back in the day?
It was Legacy, but
Back in Legacy, as well as Tyler Smith. How are you doing with the whole quarantine, Schnell? It looks like your whole place got raided. Is everything okay with you?
Well, we just moved in. I just moved into a new home. So I just had a little girl, a newborn baby. So she's
oh, congrats. 2 months old now.
So the quarantine's been okay with us. The time's gone by pretty quickly. But yeah, just trying to settle in.
How old's your baby now?
She's 2 months old.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, dude, Pat has 3 kids. I have a little daughter. It's the best. I honestly wanted a boy. I do a joke. I wanted a boy. So hopefully my kid will grow up and become a lesbian because they make the best fighters because they make the tightest fists. But I hear you, man. So by the way, so your last fight, you were doing great. You just got caught. Is that what happened?
I guess so. You know, sometimes it's hard to fight against your inner instincts. And I feel like I'm typically a guy that starts quick, and he started fast on me, and I was just fighting from behind the whole fight and kind of lost focus, and just it wasn't my night. It's a hard pill to swallow, but, you know, I'm a banger. I think I do my best when I calm down and see my shots, but I was just in the moment. I was trying to get it done, and it got done to me.
You ever have a fight like that, Pat, where you just kind of – the guy started a little quicker than you?
You know what? I was always a slow starter. You know, to be honest with you, I would deliberately slow those guys down and figure them out and get timing and stuff like that. So, I, for the most part, besides my lat Hume, they stopped. And he was probably the most intelligent fighter, certainly that I ever fought, maybe the most intelligent technicians ever in the sport. But he was avoided me and did it.
Yeah. Now, but the Matt Lindland fight, that was stopped way too quickly. I mean, they were.
Well, the thing was, by then, I didn't even want to fight because that's when I had the automatic rematch clause for welterweight against Carlos Newton. If I would have, as all it win a fight at welterweight, and then I got an automatic rematch with Carlos Newton, and they kind of reneged on that and told me that if I didn't move up to 185 pounds, which, you know, that's about what I weighed, to be honest with you, 187, 190. Yeah. That basically I was done. And so I went, wait a minute, I can't for like almost 4 years total with the tournament win included. And they're just throwing me in a garbage can. They don't give a shit. So I realized at that moment, the business of professional sports ugly. And I kind of just like, yeah, I'm done.
I also heard that he didn't shower. He smelled really bad. Did you just want out of there? It seemed like you were just like, get me the fuck out of this cage.
Well, when you know, the good thing was when he came to train with us after he beat me, we sparred and I knocked the living shit out of him. just to pay him back a little bit.
That's awesome.
He's a tough dude, man, though. He was a really tough, you know, it was like having an octopus on you. He's a very skilled guy.
Now, Matt, Schnell, where are you training out of now? Are you still in New Orleans?
No, I live in Houston. Well, I live in Atascocita, Texas. So it's like a suburb of Houston. And I've been out here for a little while now, but I've been doing my camps at Combat Sports Academy and American Kickboxing Academy for the last 4 fights.
Oh, nice. Are you training with Khabib out there?
He's been on the mat before. I mean, I've never really trained with him. He's a good bit bigger than me. I would. That'd be fun. But I've been there when he's been on the mats, and he's a nice guy.
Yeah, you're going to the right places, definitely.
Yeah. Now, what sucks about that loss is that it was in Korea. So that flight home must have been brutal. Like, did you take, what, like 3 Ambiens? Like, how do you get?
Yeah, not much sleep on the flight home. It wasn't a great time. Yeah, difficult to deal with. It's been rough, but you know, it's part of it. And it's interesting, and everybody here fights and understands that we take those L's and they hurt so bad. But after you stack a couple W's on top of it, you look back at it and think it's a good thing.
So. Well, you had 5 wins in a row. I mean, some big wins too.
In the UFC, man, we were right there, close to really. You know, and I think sometimes I let that stuff stack up against me. Sometimes I think about that stuff too much, and I'm of caliber to beat anybody. You know, I can beat all these guys. But
you're ranked ninth in the world, dude. Ninth in the world, like that's pretty freaking good, especially for a kid that was on an MTV show.
And a kid that took L's in Legacy. Pat remembers me getting beat in Legacy, and I stormed back, and I came back and became the champion. I still think I can do that. So
that's how it's done, man. Learn from those setbacks, right?
Yeah.
Did your wife at least give you a couple handies on the way home from Korea to make it?
My wife was here. She was back at home. She was freaking 8 months pregnant. So,
You're not going to get any sympathy from her, huh?
No sympathy. Yeah. We had to come get that done when I got home. So, no, it was all good. It was all good.
Now, are you training during the quarantine?
I'm doing my best to stay busy. Not much training. I've got a newborn, so I'm taking all the precautions, you know, and I'm not trying to rock the boat. My wife is also a nurse, so she's kind of in my ear about this thing, and we're taking the precautions. But I'm doing my best to stay in shape. I bought me a little bag for outside, and I crack on that a couple hours a day, maybe. And I've been running some miles, which I've not done in a while. So I've been challenging myself with that. I'm trying to stay busy as best I can.
Now, according to Pat, we need to take back our government. We need to go outside, any means necessary, and just dojo storm stores and stuff. Just if you get arrested, fuck it, all right? You want to be a true American, you got to take back this government, all right? Are you willing to do what Pat Miletich says?
I'll tell you this. I am a conservative, Pat Miletich, and I understand the different points of view. My wife is a nurse, so she's on the front line, so obviously she understands the idea.
Yeah, no, having a newborn, I mean, obviously that's a vulnerable individual, just as elderly or people with pre-existing conditions. So it does make sense for you to not get exposure.
Yeah, but
that's kind of where we are.
But Pat, you said you get your fill of big government controls yet? Too bad. They just begun. You think people are being sheep? Look, dude, don't be a sheep, all right? Get out, be a wolf, all right? Get your fucking training in. Now, I mean, Pat, don't you think these kids are pussies now? Like, back in the day, you put 85 pounds up. You had fucking I'm kidding. Who was the guy that was the biggest surprise for you? Was it Tim Sylvia?
Yeah. Tim couldn't walk and chew gum at the same time. He'd cry when we'd make him jump rope and shit, you know, and he'd cry after every practice because everybody beat the shit out of him. I remember, you know, and I won't take too long on this because I want Matt to be able to talk. The fact that, you know, at one time, Jeremy Horn, Jens Pulver, and Matt Hughes all came into my office and said, dude, tell this guy to leave. He sucks. You know, this guy's awful. And he cries every fucking practice, and we're just sick of this shit. And I go, tell him to go home because he tries so hard. You know, he truly tries. And then he got his first fight underneath us, and he won. And then he got another fight, and he won. And then he started steamrolling everybody. And I'm going, this guy turns into a total – he's a gamer. He's a gamer. Like, in the – you know, some guys are good in the practice room and suck under the lights. Total reverse with Tim. Tim would just turn into a different guy and go out and wreck shop.
Was it a – do you think he thought he was just outclassed by the other guys? Maybe it was like – I'm so big, so I can't just use my size and lay on them. But
no, because I mean, look, man, Jens Pulver used to big brother. I mean, poor Tim. When Tim was new on the team, Tim paid his own way out to Las Vegas when Matt was fighting out there. And it was Jens and I and a couple of the other guys who were veterans, and we're walking through the casino, and Tim's just, he's just walking with us. He's behind us walking with us. And he had just moved there from Maine, you know, not long before that. And Jens stopped, turned around. Jens was just a harsh guy. And he turned around to Tim, and he goes, why the fuck are you still here? Get out of here. Leave us alone. And Tim just, you know, moped away. And I was like, dude, what? I go, dude, leave the poor guy alone. And so then Tim came up to me the next day down in Vegas. And he goes, man, why is Jens so mean to me? And I go, because you let him. I go, you're big enough to eat hay and shit in the middle of the road, and you're letting a 145-pound, 155-pound guy tell him to shut up. And then he goes, oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Wait.
Oh, cool.
Stood up for himself.
I mean, Jake Ellenberger used to tell me stories, Pat, that you guys would have, like, a fight club, that he would go down there, and, like, Tuesdays and Thursdays, it was sparring for, like, 3 hours. and it was just guys beating the living shit out of each other.
No, it was Wednesday nights was hard sparring evening. Every Monday night was sparring with takedowns. Tuesday was grappling, sometimes takedowns, of course, things like that. And then Thursdays was grappling again. Saturdays was light technique sparring, things like that. But Wednesday nights, there were several times where I said, room's too full. There's too many people in here that shouldn't be in here. I said, it's then the herd night. If you get knocked out, you're done. You got to go back to beginner's class. And that was just the way it was. And it wasn't because I was an asshole because of that, but more about because fighters would come from all over the world and train with us. They'd start training with us on a Monday, and by Wednesday after practice, they're like, man, this is not for me. This is insane, because we had 40 guys ranked in the top 10 in the world in different weight divisions. And so it was just no matter who you grabbed, you were going to have a really hard night. And there were people who were big fish in a little pond come from their gym being the best guy. And they weren't ready for that because the room was 95 degrees and you got a bunch of killers in there that were used to that and dealing with that level of person. So that, you know, we had pro boxers coming in that were incredible world-class boxers. We had world-class kickboxers, world-class wrestlers, world-class jiu-jitsu guys, best guys in jiu-jitsu in the world would come in to train with these guys and stuff. So everybody was just used to it, you know, so that's just kind of how it went. But I had a guy, one time go, dude, watched what you did to that guy. I can't remember who the guy was. I sparred with some pro boxer, and he was probably a middle of the road pro boxer. And I dropped a couple times with liver shots and other stuff. And he goes, you're an asshole. You're flat out an asshole. And I go, well, listen, here's the deal. I was raised in Iowa wrestling rooms. Work ethic is paramount. And toughness is paramount. And I also watched a kid die who was not my student, just at the fights as a guest when I was a UFC champion, where I was just brought in, paid to show up at a kickboxing match in Chicago. And I watched a kid die in the ring because he was not trained correctly and he was not conditioned correctly. And so I said to everybody who would bring that up with me, I go, I don't want to have to explain to somebody's parents or wife why their son or husband is dead or in a coma because I didn't do a proper job of training him and weeding out the people that did not belong in the cage.
Matt, did you ever knock anybody out in sparring?
Yes.
Who? Give us who?
Give us names, Matt.
I mean, various training partners I've heard training and sparring. I wouldn't feel right giving out names, but things got rough at America. I trained at American Top Team for a long time, and I've banged it out with big guys, good guys as well. And I knocked out a couple guys at American Top Team.
Now, was that a way for you to be like, I'm not one to be fucked with? Like, guys were kind of test you, like you were like the new guy, and they were like, let's bully him around. And you were like, no, you can't do that to me.
So the last day it happened, I was kind of taking a whipping. And I was in a camp, and I was training hard every single day. And American Top Team, you could really run yourself down if you're not careful. So I think I was just in a rut. And a guy I trained with all the time, he was just beating on me that day. And he was kind of playing this low hands type of thing. And I just planted my foot and put one on him and, yeah, knocked him out. And it was a day that I was getting whipped, though. That was the last time I can remember it happening.
Now, when that happens, do the coaches go, break it up, and they run in and, like, revive the guy? Or is it just, like, no one even bats an eye?
Well, he went down pretty hard, but he kind of wobbled back up on wobbly legs. He was willing to keep fighting. They did stop it, and this is what's interesting. It's kind of funny. They did stop it, and they didn't let him spar. I think I finished up the round with somebody else, and he took, like, two rounds off. And at ATT, you spar rounds standing up. You go pretty hard, and then at the end, you grapple 3 5-minute rounds, something like that. So he took the rest of the sparring rounds up, came back grappling, and then smashed me the rest of the grappling. So it wasn't even over, you know. It was the
was it Luke Rockhold?
No. I never trained Luke Rockhold. He's big boy too, shoot.
Yeah, I was saying I was gonna write a joke that Luke says he got the itch to fight again, but he scratched it and fell down.
Yeah.
But he's sensitive, you know, like I have to be like, he's a little sensitive. Like,
that's so cold.
I know. It's like, but I was like, ah, man. Some jokes I think are better for the stage. Like I did a joke how, you know, they opened up Georgia. They opened up the Georgia nail salons, which I think black women are going to be safe because their nails are 6 feet long. Now, if I was, if I would have tweeted that, people would have been like, but
when that's I say a good it on live stage, joke. Yeah, that's people, a good live joke.
That's a good live joke.
I would have, at a black club.
I'll say that live. I don't know if I'll say that. Sometimes you have to be careful when you tweet stuff. So all right. So what do you think about this Fight Island? Are you willing to fight on Fight Island?
Definitely.
Yeah. You're from Louisiana, right?
I would love it. Yeah, it'd be great. I'll train outside. Who cares? Go fight on Fight Island. That'd be great. I'm in Texas. You know, it's freaking Fight Island anyways outside.
Right.
That's true. Now, Pat. So there's a story going around that you wanted to fight Tank Abbott on the street. Tank Abbott said he was judging a wet t-shirt contest. Didn't feel right doing that because he didn't want to exploit women. That was a little suspect right there. So he just went home. You said that you chased him out of the club. What happened?
Well, it was, I can't remember which UFC it was offhand now. I think it was Biloxi, Mississippi, somewhere down there. And, so we were at a club, all the fighters were at a club, and we were with our camps and stuff, and everybody was having some drinks, and Tank was out on the dance floor, and he was you know, had his shirt off, whatever, dancing with some women. And, you know, Tank, I figured, you know, I'm going to mess with this guy a little bit. So I was dancing out there, and I'd back up deliberately into him, and I'd smash into him a couple times here and there. And I couldn't get a rise out of him. I couldn't get him to do anything. And so, who knows, if he would have clubbed me from behind, I probably would have went to sleep, obviously, because he did hit hard. But so later on, he had gone around, there was a railing, a drink railing between the dance floor and the bar side of things, and he was on the other side talking to Bob Marwitz, and I walked up and started talking to Bob Marwitz, and I looked at Tank and I go, hey man, good fight tonight. He had won, and he face palmed my face with his hand, and he shoved me backwards. He goes, get out of my face. And so I called him a fat piece of shit, and I said I was going to kick his ass. So he started walking down the railing, and I started walking down the railing, and I figured once we got to the end, we'd just turn toward each other and start scrapping. Well, he took a right turn and went out the door with his two boys, and I went to go out, and Ken Gabrielson, who was the first American to get a black belt under the Gracies, grabbed me by the arm, and he goes, dude, don't go out there and get in trouble. And I go, don't worry, I got this. So I went outside, and they were jogging down the street. They already had a good block and a half start on me. So I took off running, and I was calling him names, and I'm chasing him, and it was like three blocks away was our hotel. So I got to the hotel. I went inside, and there was Jerry Bolander. And I go, Jerry, you see Tank? And he goes, yeah, he just came in, and got in the elevator and went upstairs. So, you know, that was the story. Yeah. And Tank says that I'm full of shit, that I wasn't chasing him.
There's a couple like holes to the story. Number one, Tank Abbott running. I mean, like that's number one. And did he have the biggest tits on the dance floor? Because he had his shirt off, so he probably.
I wasn't impressed with the hair coming off of him, but yes, he did.
Yes.
But here's the thing. I've recognized that crow. Have a screw loose, all of us.
Yeah,
I mean, that's just, it's in our blood. So, you know, that's just the way we are, bro. So, yeah, if I was going to jog, it's when a drunk Croatian's mad and chasing you, probably.
Of course. That's hilarious. I love that. Now, you were going to fight Michael Nunn in kickboxing next week or something?
June 6th. We had pushed it back long before this hit because of conflict. The Athletic Commission had a conflict and open dates with arenas and all that sort of stuff. So it's still set for June 6th. It may have to get pushed back again.
Michael Nunn went to jail for 10 years or something, right? He was a world champion boxer.
He was the best pound-for-pound boxer in the world for 4 years. He's from my area and trained at the same boxing gym that I did here in Iowa at Pena's boxing gym. But the best guys in the world would not fight him, you know, after they saw what he was doing to everybody.
Are you in kickboxing shape?
I will be. I absolutely will be.
That's awesome. I'm definitely going to watch that. I'm going to watch that.
Fuck yeah, I'm going to watch that.
Matt Snell, do you have any fighting Tank Abbott stories?
No fighting. I wish I did. I'm just taking it all in. These are great.
have you ever wanted to fight a pro fighter outside the octagon or the cage?
I can't say I have. I try and keep it cool. I don't know.
That's a good thing.
Coming up, I feel like I did fight, and I've always kind of been a rough kid. I'm not afraid of confrontation, but I've always tried to keep it pretty civil with comings and goings and not being about to fight somebody. I don't know. It's never come to that.
That's good. That's a good thing, man. You know, I think it's that you're a millennial. See, Pat's an old school guy. I
mean, that was the Wild West. That was the golden era of MMA. You know, that's how it should have been. That was a different breed of guys, you know?
Like, Pat, first time Pat cut weight was at the Last Supper. That's how old he is. His first sponsor was Fire. Okay, that's how old, you know, Pat's the, you know, he's an old school guy. You can watch his fights on the History Channel. That's how old school Pat is. You know, you guys are, no offense, but you're on TikTok and this and that, you know. He was on Tic-Tac-Toe. That's how old he is. But this dude, but I hear you. It's two generations. If it wasn't for Pat, there wouldn't be guys for you. And but you're a throwback fighter. I mean, you're all action, Matt.
Yeah,
try to be. Yeah, I only know one way, and that's to fight.
Well, weren't you at American Top Team for a while?
I trained at American Top Team for four years. I think I took an L in Legacy, and I moved to American Top Team, and that's when I won the title. And I trained at American Top Team until I got on The Ultimate Fighter. And then I started training out in California after The Ultimate Fighter because I met Kieran Fitzgibbons, and he's the head coach of CSA.
Were you living in the dorms at American Top Team?
I did. I lived in the dorms for a little bit.
Now, it's crazy, right? There's no marijuana. Didn't, like, guys get kicked out for marijuana?
Actually, when I was on the podcast, we talked about this before, yeah. But, like, dude, don't smoke weed, and that's freaking stupid. You can go outside and smoke weed. Like, you get kicked out and you smoke weed in your dorm. You dummy? Yeah.
Yeah, it was Walt Harris and then somebody else. It was Todd Duffy got kicked out, right? Like, these guys, I
know both those goofs pretty well, and it's like, don't smoke weed in your room, dog. Come on now.
Now, Pat, you were on the same high school wrestling team as Mark Kerr. Did you know back then that this guy was going to one day be a world champion?
No, I mean, he was a freshman, and all the wrestling guys, I was a senior at the time, and so, you know, everybody – a lot of the seniors picked on Mark, actually. And I always, honestly, I just felt, I got along with his brother real well also. And, you know, I liked him. I liked him a lot. He was a nice kid. And, you know, I told the older guys a lot of times, I'd stick up for him. I'd say, yeah, leave the kid alone, man. Quit beating him up and stuff. Because where I grew up, Bettendorf, Iowa, I mean, it's a hotbed for wrestling, even by Iowa standards. I mean, we have had a lot of monsters. And at any given time in my hometown, I've been like the 20th, maybe the 20th toughest guy in a town of 40,000, 35,000, 40,000 people. I mean, there's a lot of badasses that come from my hometown. So, but I had no, he was such a nice guy that no, I didn't, I never foresaw him becoming a fighter.
Yeah, that was crazy is that I look in like a bizarro universe, right? Where he lost to Kurt Angle by 1 point for the Olympic trials. Kurt goes on to win the gold medal. Mark goes on to go pride, right? One point. So what if he would have won by 1 point? What if he got that takedown? Would Kurt Angle went into pride and would Angle have won the gold medal? Like, I just think like that 1 point, their whole universes might have just been totally different.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Angle certainly could have been a great fighter, but the problem was he had a trash neck. Even during the Olympics, he won a gold medal with a completely trash neck. So the fact that he made it that far with that neck, it probably wouldn't have lasted in fighting.
Who
went on and had a crazy WWF WWE career?
Yeah,
and it was like doing even worse, way worse. I would rather take a punch than fly off the top ropes into a table.
Yeah, you know, that's the scary thing about it. But the punch you don't see is the one that paralyzes you when you've got a bad neck, right?
True, right.
Now, who is a guy that you wish, like, I mean, I hate to say Melvin Gallard would be, like, a good example, but you just wish he would have, like, he had all the talent in the world, but just the distractions of the girls or the drugs or the parties – being at like Pat Miletich camps, who was the guy that you were just like, oh, I wish you would have had a big brother or something?
You know, it's kind of a tragic story is Justin Eilers. He was shot and killed by his stepfather on Christmas evening or Christmas Eve, when he went back to visit his mother back out in Idaho. And he was real good friends with Jens Pulver. They were real good buddies. And, you know, he was just – he was not real coachable, would lose his temper real easy, not listen to advice, and just very, very volatile personality. And he was a guy that I really wish would have listened, because he played football at Iowa State University. They called him the Uber. And I think he might still hold the sack record for Iowa State University, but he was an All-American linebacker at Iowa State. He was an incredible athlete. Wasn't necessarily the easiest to coach, though.
Yeah, no, there's so many guys that I wish the LFA and the UFC would do a better job of telling their stories. You got a guy like Alonzo Minefield, who went to like 30 different group homes, was adopted by a Christian people from Africa at like 15, him and his brother. Now he's undefeated with like 9 knockouts, like pro. But no one knows that. They put him out, like Alonzo Minefield. You just like no one gives a fuck.
He's so squared away too, man, because of his experiences in life. He's a very humble guy. He's a very good, very good, dedicated athlete. And you can tell, you know, you can tell where he holds his standards and morals in life in general. And that's a really good thing. And he's a great example for a lot of the young guys coming up.
Now, that's what I like about LFA, though, is that they let you guys be fun. Like, there was a guy, the Baker, who wore a Baker hat.
Yeah, Ben the Baker.
Yeah, he would show up as like, and he was a baker in real life. So like, but that's, to me, that's what I like about Bellator. They go a little bit too much, I think, into it with like too much WWE. But I think there has to be something that, because I think with Reebok having your guys' uniforms, you guys all look the same, you know? And I think that's a problem because, you know, I mean, you look at back in the day, Sokoju's outfits really stood out from like, he was, or certain guys, you were like, it just seems like this is something that kind of differentiates some of the fighters.
The UFC does have to be choosy with the stories they tell. They have such a big roster, you know, so I do kind of understand it from that aspect. And they kind of leave it up to you to break out, you know, if you want to be these guys who get a fast rise. Like, I think before the UFC puts them on the fast track, they're already on the way. You know,
yeah, but Max, no, but that's the problem, right? Because you're a fighter, okay? Your job is to become a fighter, and that's a 24-hour job. You're hard enough to do what you do, right? Your job isn't to be your own publicist and to be this and that. That's another separate thing. And they have enough people in that thing. So Max Schnell, okay, you won 5 in a row. Let's say you won the last fight. That's 6 in a row. But you're a nice guy. You're a hardworking guy. But
really good looking.
You're a good looking guy, but you're going to be there in that same category of like, generic white guy, and that sucks because guys then go out of their way to like Colby Covington it, where I'm the biggest Trump supporter in the world and I'm gonna talk shit to everybody, and everyone like, oh, I hate that guy, but they're like, well, he's selling tickets, and you shouldn't have to do that,
right?
You know, because it is a sport, and it shouldn't be up to these guys to come up with gimmicks for yourselves.
Yeah, I understand it. And like me, I understand. I kind of feel like I'm on the outside looking in sometimes as well. But, you know, I'm just not willing to sell my soul to have a few extra 1,000 followers. You know, I got a newborn now. Like I've said before, I am a conservative as well. So I'm not going to be a wild man out here. I've got a daughter. One day she'll be old enough to type my name into YouTube, and I don't want to have to explain to her some nonsense I said.
So, Pat, what's the answer, Pat? Tell us the answer.
Well, I can tell you. It's kind of interesting. I wrote I was into a lot of script, screenplay writing, television show concept writing, and I also wrote a plan for a mixed martial arts model for a company. and I got it, actually, from the local grocery stores here that were started in southern Iowa, and it grew, and it put a lot of the other – companies out of business, but they give shares of stock for that company to the employees as they stay on longer and longer and longer. They get shares of stock and get plans set up so that they can live a good life after they're done working. So for all intents and purposes, I used that model and talked to some of the people in corporate and wrote a plan for a mixed martial arts organization that that gave fighters, the ones that were loyal and stayed around, basically be vested in stock options and things like that. And I really never shopped it, but it's, you know, it's on paper. And I think, you know, if I ran into a couple millionaires and some billionaires, some wealthy people who wanted to start something that could compete and be successful, that would be it.
But how does a guy like Matt Schnell get, because Matt Schnell won 6 out of 7, he's a badass fighter, he's this and that, how does he get like a bigger wave? How does he get the push? Because I know like WWE, Vince McMahon says, you're going to be gold dust and you're going to be the whatever and you're going to be whoever. Well, the UFC shouldn't have to do that.
Right, right. Well, I mean, number one, he's a very good fighter, right? That's got to happen. You know, but I would say that, you know, ultimately, you know, the Kim Kardashians of the MMA world, most of the time are flashes in the pan and they don't last very long. Every once in a while, sure, they stick around, but, you know, it's it just comes down to him. He's got to keep winning. He's got to be exciting as he is. And people are going to love him either way at that point, you know? So that's really what it comes down to. And when you're kicking people's asses and start demanding more money, and start getting, some dollars, some points on each pay-per-view buy, you know, you end up becoming independently wealthy and really it doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter.
I think at some point you got to take responsibility for who you are. My personality type maybe doesn't jump out to everybody. It's not the most appealing thing to people. They want to hear short little one-liners and Irish accents, you know, and I don't necessarily have that ability. I'm going to stick by who I am. And I think that over the long run, you know, I probably got another 4 or 5 good years in me. And by the time it's all said and done, I will be more notable than I am now. But I'm the same you guys started a little slower.
No, I'm the same baby with comedy. I'm like, yeah, I could kiss everyone's ass and go on the hot podcast and this and that, pretend to be I'm a big fan of taking
sleep your way to the top.
Fucking mushrooms and stuff. I know, but I'm saying I could all of a sudden, but I'm like, fuck that. I'm gonna interview who I want. I'm gonna have the legends on, and I'm gonna be the comic I want. I'm not like before a while, all the comedy world was like storyteller comics. And I'm like, I don't like telling fucking stories. I get bored through my own story. Like I'm a joke teller. And then it was like, all right, well, you gotta do act outs and make funny noises. And I'm like, look, there are guys that do that. I'm just gonna fucking tell as many jokes as I can, jokes per minute. That's my style. And eventually people will come. And that's kind of what's been working for me because people are like, if I need jokes per minute, you know, but I think you're right. I think if you're a clout chaser, like if you chase trends, eventually it's just not going to work.
You know? I think that there's an interesting parallel between comedy and fighting. And I think that fighting is very much, you're acting out who you are in the way that you fight and comedy's like that, and to sacrifice who you are and then go and fight like somebody else. It's just hard to keep those things going for a long time. At some point, Colby Covington's going to have to sell the goat and, you know, come to terms with who he actually is. And I'm never going to have to do that. And I hope that over time that me as a person, people appreciate that. Think of a guy like a good example is Derek Lewis. Derek Lewis was in the UFC for 4 years. Nobody knew who he was. And then he blows up. And I'm not a heavyweight. I'm not Derek Lewis. But I like that story. Some people start slow.
Yeah, no, totally. Love
Derek Lewis, baby.
Yeah, no, of course. I like Derek Lewis. So who do you think wins? All right, before we end, Gaethje or Ferguson? If this happens, who wins?
Who goes?
Pat, you go first.
Say that again.
Justin,
you were breaking up.
Tony Ferguson or Justin Gaethje, who wins?
I think Gaethje wins, brother. He's got a good chance. Ferguson's so technical, though. I mean, Ferguson's one of those guys that I watched training. I watched him training on a film, and I went, this guy's legit. Like a long time ago, I went, this guy is truly dangerous. Gaethje's pace is insane for most people. He can keep up with it. Boy, that's an insane fight. It's absolutely an insane fight. I mean, I've been around the sport so long as an athlete, as a coach, and as a broadcaster that I don't get excited that easily, unless I'm calling fights and know these guys personally and stuff, where I get invested in those actual events that I'm calling. Dude, I don't even get pay-per-views. I mean, I don't even watch. I most of the time I can go, all right, this guy's probably going to win this, that, whatever. But that's a fight that I would pay for. And that's, for me, that's saying something, because I'm telling you, I don't pay for very many events.
Wait, now, would you pay with global currency or with actual dollars?
Depends on what the globalists force us to do, brother.
Of course. Matt Snell, who wins this fight?
I also like Justin Gaethje in this fight, and I think that I think it's a great fight as well. I think Tony Ferguson's a wild man. I think what makes Tony Ferguson so difficult to deal with is that he doesn't even know his next move. So it's very difficult to game a guy like that or to try to pick up on tendencies. What's Tony Ferguson's tendency? He doesn't have one. He's going to do twisting, jumping, wild stuff. So I think it catches up to him in this one. Gaethje can really crack, and I think he finds his mark.
All right, and a final question, Pat. A fight that never happened. I was always a big fan and friend of Kevin Randleman. He always wanted to fight Tito Ortiz. Who in that prime Kevin Randleman versus prime Tito Ortiz, who wins that fight?
Randleman ragdolls him because Randleman was such a high-level wrestler and so explosive that Tito needed wrestling to beat most people. He was a better wrestler than a lot of the pot. He wouldn't have that, you know, to Randleman.
Yeah, and then also you were there when Tito got knocked out, right, by that street fight, by Lee Murray.
Yeah, I was there.
I mean, did he get like knocked out cold, or did he just get dropped?
He got knocked out cold by Lee Murray by himself, and the story is Tito threw a combination at Lee. Lee ducked out of the way of every single punch. Landed a beautiful five-punch combo on Tito. I mean, you could hear just bone on bone, just vicious punches. Tito fell down on his face unconscious, and Lee started putting the boots to his head with steel-toed boots, mind you. And I was friends with Tito at the time, and I was training Lee at the time. So I grabbed Lee and said, Lee, stop. And he goes, all right, Pat, I'm out of here. And, you know, it's 5 a.m. in a London alley, and he took off, and a bunch of London police officers showed up, and of course they don't have guns, and you know they're walking around with their sticks and some cans of pepper spray as big as fire extinguishers. And I said to the guy, I go, who's running the show here out of you guys? And one of the English cops goes, me. And I go, I'm just telling you right now, you're not aware of who you're dealing with. The whole alley was full of fighters. I mean, it was like 50 people, fighters, their coaches, training partners. And I go, if you start spraying these people with that OC, with those OC canisters, you are going to get the fuck beat out of you. And I go, these are all professional fighters, bro. Don't even start. And he goes, in his British accent, he's like, all right, you're in charge. Get them out of here. And that's what I did. I said, let's get out of here, man. So nobody goes to jail. I started talking to everybody. And
did you pick Tito up from the ground? And when he got caught,
we helped him up. Tony Fricklin and I helped him up. Absolutely.
Did he say what happened?
Basically, yeah.
Wow. Now, he said, was he wearing his dress shoes? Because the rumor was he was wearing his dress shoes.
You know, I don't remember. You know, he can say what he wants. He got knocked out cold, and it is what it was. The sad thing was is that night and the consequences of Tito going back to Dana camp and all of Lee Murray's friends jumped him and his guys and beat him up is what got Dana originally mad at me. I got mad at Dana because Dana cut Tony Fricklin from the UFC. Because of that, Tony never threw a single punch. I never threw a single punch, and that started that war between Dana and I, unfortunately, because he got lied to by Tito. You know, I'm glad that all that stuff is water under the bridge now.
Wait, so Tito and his friends came back and beat up Lee Murray?
So what?
Wait, so Tito and his friends came back and jumped Lee Murray and all his friends?
No. That's the lie. The lie that Tito told Dana was that my camp and Lee's buddies and him jumped Tito and his guys. We all jumped him and beat him and his buddies up. And that's not what happened.
Because you had nothing to do with it.
Well, all it was Tito's buddy Bo jumped on my back and acted like he was choking me. But he wasn't choking me. I could tell he was horsing around because he wasn't choking me. His arm was around my neck. But Tony Fricklin, to him, it looked like Bo was on my back. Had me in a rear choke. So Tony ripped him off my back and said, what are you trying to do to my coach? And at that point, Bo started to yell at Tony because Tony ripped him off of me pretty forcefully. And at that time, Lee's buddy Paul, who was part of that big bank heist, blasted Bo with a right hand and knocked him out unconscious. And then the whole alley exploded. And then Tito went after Lee. And then Tito went down. And then
Wow. These are crazy Wild West MMA stories. They don't happen, right? A match now goes
to page.
Yeah, Matt goes
to the camp. You know, everybody's got cell phone cameras. There's security cameras everywhere. You know, there's liability and, everybody gets sued. You know,
Matt,
all of that shit.
Step it up. I mean, what do? You like go to your camp, go home, you get to take a nap? I mean,
hardly. I haven't left the house. I mean, everybody's quarantined, but I was quarantined before the quarantine.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's telling bank heist, his stories have bank heists in them, and like fucking cops are letting him run the show. And
I live in the suburbs, bro.
He's chasing around topless Tank Abbott. Like, what are you doing with your life, Matt? Seriously, man, you call yourself a fighter?
Like, hey, this is why my career doesn't break out. Pat Miletich would have been a hot ticket back in the day.
Thing was, is I'd never gotten fights when I was a professional athlete. Besides, like that situation with Tank, I generally I was in the gym constantly, and if I wasn't in the gym, I was at home. So yeah, I didn't get in trouble at all when I was fighting. When I was actually a professional athlete, for the most part.
Well, listen, you're a Hall of Famer. You're the you know first champion at in the UFC at welterweight. So that's amazing. You know, you're a legend, a legend of the game.
Absolutely.
And
you mispronounced old.
No, man. No, fuck that. No, fuck that. Okay. So, and then Matt Snell, what's your record now? 13-3 or something?
I think I'm 14-5.
14-5. You won 5 out of 6. A victory over Lewis Smolka.
Yeah.
You got some huge wins, and I can't wait to see you fight again. Good luck with that baby. All right.
If
you
need any,
oh, by the way, get the snoo. You know what the snoo is?
We got one. Yeah.
Oh, fucking game changer.
Hey, it was an honor too. I didn't know that I was going to be on this with Pat Miletich. Pat, always
great to talk to you, Matt, man. And stay healthy. Keep that baby healthy, brother.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Take care, guys. Bye, Tyler.
Take care. Sons and trap, don't subtract. Түүний сонс тө хөгжим дөрвөл лаа. Дадаш дуутан дөрвөл амуу таа.